Okay, so let's jump into this medical malpractice case. It's Almond v. Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. And basically, it involves a woman named Catherine Coffey, who unfortunately passed away after some complications from heart surgery.
Yeah, it's a really interesting case because it all started with what seemed like a pretty routine post-op issue.
Oh, okay.
So the plaintiffs, Coffey's estate and her husband, they're saying that the hospital messed up the glucose drip that she was getting through a catheter in her hand, and that this, you know, led to the glucose like leaking into the tissue around her hand and causing some serious damage.
And this is after like bypass surgery, right?
Yeah, exactly, a coronary bypass.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then what happened? I mean, what happened after the glucose thing?
Well, that's where it gets really tragic. So the infiltration, that's what they call it when the glucose leaks out. Allegedly, it led to them having to amputate parts of her hand. And then she developed a MRSA infection, which is, you know, really serious bacterial infection. And that ultimately led to her having a fatal heart attack.
So they're basically saying that the hospital like screwed up this glucose drip and that set off this whole chain of events that ultimately killed her.
Yeah, that's the gist of their argument. They claim that Dartmouth Hitchcock, you know, violated the standard of care in a few different ways, including, you know, how they handled the glucose and also their approach to her nutritional needs.
And I imagine the hospital's denying all of this.
Of course. They're saying there's no direct link between their actions and what happened to Coffey. So it's, you know, a classic he said, she said medical malpractice battle.
And to prove their case, what kind of evidence are the plaintiffs using?
Well, one of the key pieces of evidence they're relying on is some potentially damaging statements that were allegedly made by hospital employees.
Like what kinds of statements?
Well, we don't know exactly what they said, but it sounds like they were comments made by nurses or other staff members who were directly involved in Coffey's care. So, you know, firsthand observations about what was going on.
Oh, so like those on the ground observations could really shed light on like the hospital's practices, like how they handle these situations.
Exactly. And that's why these statements could be so powerful. They offer a glimpse into what was happening, you know, behind the scenes, whether there were any warning signs that were missed, that kind of thing.
But I bet the hospital fought tooth and nail to keep those statements out of court, right?
Well, absolutely. They filed a motion in Lemming to exclude that evidence, arguing that it shouldn't be admissible.
Did it work?
Nope. The court denied their request. So those employees' statements are now fair game in the legal battle. Big win for the plaintiffs.
Wow. Okay, so we've got these employee statements that could be pretty damaging. What else? What other legal issues are at play here?
Well, another big point of contention is the whole issue of damages. It's not just about proving negligence. It's also about how much money the plaintiffs could get if they win.
Right, right.
And this is where Dartmouth Hitchcock tried to, you know, play a little hardball.
Okay, how so?
Well, they basically tried to argue that the amount the jury should consider for damages should be capped at what Medicare actually paid for Coffey's treatment.
So, wait, instead of like the full cost of all her medical care, they wanted the jury to only look at the discounted rate that Medicare negotiated.
Yeah, basically. It was a clever tactic trying to limit their potential liability.
And did it work?
No, it did not. The court invoked the collateral source rule.
Remind me what that is again.
Basically, it's a legal principle that says a defendant can't benefit from the fact that the plaintiff got compensation from, like, a third party, like an insurance company.
So even though Medicare covered some of her bills, the hospital can't use that to try and reduce what they might owe.
Exactly. The court basically said, look, if the jury decides that the full amount billed for her care was reasonable, that's what Dartmouth Hitchcock is on the hook for, regardless of what Medicare paid.
Wow. So this collateral source rule is a pretty big deal for plaintiffs in these cases.
Oh, yeah. Hugely important. It ensures that, you know, defendants are held accountable for the full consequences of their actions, at least the actions that are alleged to be negligent.
Makes sense. So we've got the employee statements, the damages issue. What else is going on legally in this case?
Well, there's also been some back and forth about the whole expert testimony thing, which is always a big deal in medical malpractice cases.
Yeah, why is that? What's the issue there?
So Dartmouth Hitchcock wanted to use Coffey's own treating physicians as expert witnesses.
Makes sense. They knew her case best.
Right. But here's the thing. There are these specific rules, Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 26, that dictate how experts have to be disclosed and what information needs to be shared about them. And Dartmouth Hitchcock, they messed up. They didn't properly disclose these physicians as experts in a timely manner.
So even though these were her own doctors, they weren't allowed to give their expert opinion.
Yeah. The court ruled against them. It's all about following procedure.
I see. So this is where the whole treating physician versus what was it, retained expert thing comes into play.
Exactly. So treating physicians, obviously, they're the doctors who directly provided care to the patient. They can testify about their observations, diagnoses, the treatments they gave, all based on, you know, their firsthand experience.
Right.
They don't have to give this like big formal report like a retained expert would.
So they're basically giving insight based on their like direct involvement, but they're not like official expert witnesses.
Exactly. But here's the catch. Even though they don't need that full report, you still have to disclose them as experts, you know, tell the other side you're planning to use them, give some basic info about what their opinions are, all under Rule 26. And that's where Dartmouth Hitchcock stumbled. They didn't follow those procedural steps, and it cost them.
So no expert testimony from Coffey's own doctors, huh? That's gonna hurt.
Yeah, big blow to their case. On the other hand, you know, if they wanted to bring in some outside specialist who wasn't involved in her direct care, like maybe a cardiologist or something, to offer a different perspective, that doctor would be considered a retained expert. They'd need to submit a much more detailed report.
Okay, got it. So they tripped up on a technicality and it hurt them.
It happens all the time. These procedural rules, they're not just, you know, formalities, they have teeth. Even a seemingly small misstep can have a big impact.
So far, we've got potential negligence hinted at by the employee statements, that whole collateral source rule protecting the plaintiff's right to full damages, and now this expert witness fumble. Dartmouth Hitchcock is not having a good time in court.
You could say that, but there's one more thing. They tried to introduce this policy, a policy from Mercy Hospital as part of their defense.
Oh, that's interesting. A policy from another hospital? Why?
Well, it all goes back to those medical standards, you know, what's considered acceptable practice.
Yeah.
The policy was about hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, which is, remember, what started this whole mess with Coffey. The low blood sugar led to the glucose drip and then everything else that followed.
Right. Well,
so Dartmouth Hitchcock wanted to use this Mercy Hospital policy to show that their approach to hypoglycemia was, you know, in line with what other hospitals do. Like, hey, everyone else does it this way too, so don't blame us.
Interesting. So were they allowed to use it?
Not completely. The court said they could mention it during the trial, but only if they gave a copy of the policy to the plaintiffs beforehand.
So no surprises allowed.
Exactly. The plaintiffs needed time to, you know, review it and come up with any counterarguments or maybe show how their practices were different from Mercy Hospital's.
So we've covered quite a bit here. Employee statements, the damages battle, the expert witness debacle, and now this whole other hospital policy thing. This case is like a legal thriller.
Oh, yeah. And we're just getting started. There's a lot more to uncover as we delve deeper.
Okay, so we've laid out like the key players, right? The events, the legal battleground, all that. But what does it all actually like mean? We've got these puzzle pieces, the employee statements, the fight over damages, that whole expert testimony thing, the Mercy Hospital policy. How do they all fit together? What's the bigger picture?
Well, what's really fascinating about this case, Oman v. Dartmouth Hitchcock, is that it goes beyond just, you know, this one patient's experience. It gives us a kind of a glimpse into how these procedural rules and these evidentiary battles can, like, shape the whole course of medical malpractice litigation.
So it's not just about the medical stuff, but about how the legal system itself, like, plays a role.
Right. The medical details are obviously important. They're the foundation of everything. But this case shows just how much power procedure has in the legal world. One misstep, you know, like we saw with the expert witness disclosure, can create this ripple effect that impacts the whole case.
Yeah, it's like chess, right? Every move you make has consequences.
Exactly. And in this case, Dartmouth Hitchcock seems to have made a few moves that put them on the defensive. First, they tried to get those employee statements thrown out. Then they tried to limit the damages based on Medicare, and then they messed up the expert witness thing.
Not a good look.
Right. So they've definitely had some setbacks. But here's where it gets interesting. These procedural rules, even though they might seem like, you know, technicalities, they're actually there to make sure things are fair, to level the playing field.
Okay, I'm not sure I follow. How do things like excluding those statements or using that collateral source rule, how do those promote fairness? I mean, sometimes it seems like they could be like disadvantageous.
Well, think about those employee statements. The plaintiffs are saying the hospital was negligent, right? those statements from the nurses and staff, those could be really important in backing that up. They might reveal concerns that were raised or mistakes, or even like a pattern of behavior that points to negligence.
So by letting those statements in, the court is giving the plaintiffs a chance to show the whole picture.
Exactly. It's about transparency, making sure all the relevant info is considered. And the collateral source rule, yeah, that one can seem counterintuitive. Why should the defendant pay the full amount if insurance already covered some of it?
I was wondering about that. Seems like they're being punished twice.
Yeah, a lot of people think that. But the reason for the rule is to stop the defendant from benefiting from the plaintiff's own, you know, foresight in having insurance. Think about it. If defendants knew they could always reduce what they owed by pointing to insurance, well, there'd be less reason for them to be careful and avoid negligence in the first place.
So it's about keeping them accountable, making sure they're responsible for what they did, regardless of insurance.
Exactly. It levels the playing field. No free passes just because the plaintiff had insurance.
Okay, so we see these safeguards in place to make things fair, but we also see how messing up, even on something small, can have big consequences. What can, like, lawyers and law students, what can they learn from all this?
I'd say this case is a perfect example of how important it is to be prepared, to be meticulous, know the rules of the game inside and out, and always think ahead, try to anticipate what your opponent might do.
It really is like chess.
Absolutely. And when it comes to medical malpractice, where the stakes are so high that strategic thinking can be what makes or breaks your case.
So, like, specific advice. What would you tell lawyers and law students who are dealing with these, you know, complex medical malpractice cases?
First thing, know your evidence rules and procedure. Those rules aren't just, you know, abstract ideas. They're your tools. Second, discovery is huge. Gather all the facts, talk to witnesses, really dig into those medical records. And third, expert testimony. It's essential. Find the right experts, prepare them well, make sure they get the legal side of things.
Great advice. Anything else?
Don't forget the human side of things. These cases are about real people who've been hurt. Your job is to fight for your client with compassion.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's easy to lose sight of that when you're caught up in the legal stuff.
It happens, but it's important to remember.
So we've got the procedural stuff, the strategy, the ethical considerations. But there's something else here, Rhett. What about the bigger picture? How does this case affect the whole healthcare system?
That's a great question. Because Almond v. Dartmouth-Hitchcock, it's not just a lawsuit. It reflects this whole complicated relationship between law and medicine.
Okay, help me understand that. What can we learn about how law impacts healthcare?
Well, this case shows us the tension between accountability and the fear of getting sued. On one hand, patients deserve good care, competent care, and they should be able to go to court if they think they've been harmed.
Right, so healthcare providers have to be held to a high standard.
Yes. But on the other hand, being afraid of lawsuits can lead to what we call defensive medicine. Doctors order extra tests, procedures, things they might not even think are necessary, just to protect themselves. And that can make healthcare more expensive and sometimes lead to worse outcomes.
So it's this balancing act, right? Protecting patients, but not making doctors so scared that they can't do their jobs.
Exactly. This case forces us to think about that balance. How can we have a system that holds providers accountable when they mess up, but also lets them provide good care without constantly worrying about getting sued?
Tough question.
It is. But it's a conversation we need to have, especially as medicine keeps advancing and the legal world changes with it.
You know, we've talked about all the legal strategy, the evidence, the big picture stuff, but I keep thinking about Catherine Coffey. It's easy to get, you know, lost in the legal arguments, but at the end of the day, this is about a real person who went through something horrible and it could have been prevented.
You're absolutely right. We can't forget the human side of these cases. Every medical malpractice case involves real people, real suffering. And in this case, it's about a woman who went in for a routine procedure and it cost her her life.
It really makes you think about medical errors and how we can stop these things from happening in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
What can, like, healthcare providers do to reduce these risks?
That's the million-dollar question. There's no easy answer, but there are definitely steps healthcare providers can take to minimize the chances of errors happening.
Like what? What would actually make a difference?
Well, one big thing is communication. Studies show that communication breakdowns between, you know, doctors, nurses, everyone involved, those are a huge factor in medical errors. So improving those communication protocols, like using clear language, making sure everyone feels comfortable speaking up, that can all help.
Yeah, that seems, like, obvious, but I guess in a busy hospital, it's easy for things to get lost in the shuffle.
Oh, for sure. That's why it's so important to have systems in place to make sure the right information gets where it needs to go, accurately and quickly. And another area is standardizing procedures. Having clear guidelines, protocols for the common procedures that can reduce variation in care and make sure everyone's following best practices.
So it's about taking out the guesswork, making sure everyone's on the same page.
Exactly. Obviously, no system is perfect. Humans make mistakes. But these kinds of safeguards can really help reduce the risk of errors, make things safer for patients.
And that's what matters, right? Making sure patients get the best care possible, preventing these tragedies.
Absolutely. Litigation can provide some justice, some compensation, but the real goal is to have a healthcare system where these kinds of cases just don't happen.
Well said. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Almond v. Dartmouth Hitchcock, we're left with a lot to think about. The legal issues are complicated, but the human impact is really what sticks with you.
Yeah, it's a powerful reminder of the challenges and opportunities at the intersection of law and medicine. The legal fight may go on, but the bigger conversations about patient safety, accountability, striving for excellence in healthcare, those are essential.
It reminds us that we all have a role to play in making healthcare safer, making sure patients always come first.
Couldn't agree more.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you found it, you know, informative, interesting, something to think about. And remember, this is just one case, one story. There are so many others out there, each with its own lessons.
Keep learning, keep asking questions, keep trying to make a difference.
And until next time, stay curious.